Draft on Draft podcast, a Friday edition as we get into the weekend here. And as we close in on 1 month away until the NFL draft here, the big show, the real deal. Today, Dalton and I, again, because I'm not doing this by myself, Dalton and I are going to discuss Daniel Jeremiah and Mel Kiper's mock drafts. They both dropped a mock draft about 40 days out. Daniel Jeremiah, I went back and I read his 2022 mock, which I was looking at for some like quarterback variants because everybody was mocking, like there were some NFL network mocks that were mocking like four quarterbacks in round one, even after the combine in 2022, and only one went in the first three rounds. So I was like, I want to know how accurate predictive these are. And Daniel Jeremiah only had one quarterback, and it was Kenny Pickett in his mock draft 3.0 in 2022. So I give some credence to Jeremiah's mocks a little bit. And so we're going to talk about Kiper and Jeremiah's mocks here. But Dalton, again, winding down the night here in Portugal, how are you?
I am here and I am awake. And I actually just want to kind of get into this. You were talking about the quarterbacks here. Let's start off with the quarterbacks. We just went through a mock draft and did it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And after going through multiple mock drafts recently, we have not had Shedeur Sanders go in round one. Both Mel and DJ have Shedeur going number three overall to the New York Football Giants. I think it would be worth it. Like, I mean, if I'm New York, I mean, first of all, let's look at this from outside of a football perspective. Shedeur Sanders and the marketability of him in New York is a match made in heaven. It's a match made in heaven. Now, Shedeur, and this is where I kind of go back and forth. Is Shedeur in New York media? Could be a disaster.
Yep.
Or it could be absolutely perfect because Shedeur doesn't care. Like, he's not going to be bothered by the media talking because Shedeur worries about himself. You know what I mean? Like, there's no lack of confidence there. There's no listening to what's going on and you know, worrying about the outside noise. Mm-hmm. He has full confidence in himself. And I think at the end of the day, I think it could be a really good fit, but just strictly from a marketability perspective, I mean, that's one of the top selling jerseys immediately if you draft him at number three.
For sure. Yeah, it absolutely is. It's also kind of a noisy city, but again, Shedeur doesn't care about the noise. So I think, if there's one quarterback who can't handle it, like he went to the combine and people are like, "You're brash," and he's like, "Okay,
yeah."
I think that would be a pretty good fit to go to the Giants. Again, they kind of played it up during the Heisman weekend as well, where he went out to New York with Travis Hunter and was hanging out with Malik Nabers in the streets and things like that too, like throwing a football with Malik Nabers in the streets. And so they're trying to play it up a little bit, I think, too. And you know, there was a lot of reports coming out that the Giants have spent a lot of time in Boulder this season as well, trying to get to know both Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. So it could honestly be Travis Hunter is their go-to guy there as well. But I'm curious. I feel like the Browns or the Giants are going to do it mainly because like those two regimes are trying to save their skins. And if you're trying to save your skins, you don't go out not swinging. And the way to swing is to draft a rookie quarterback and see what happens. But also the Giants are in the market for Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. So like perhaps they don't even want to start a rookie in the first year anyway. So it's an interesting situation. I don't know. This quarterback market it makes no sense to me how it's playing out, how Aaron Rodgers is holding the entire NFL hostage right now, the entire quarterback market hostage right now, and kind of how this quarterback class is shaking out. It's an anomaly this season.
Yeah, and then you have to get into the Geno trade and Sam Darnold going to Seattle and what the hell that decision was all about from Seattle's perspective. And It's all incredibly interesting. And you're right. It's weird because I don't know, like, gambling on a rookie quarterback with your job on the line is a tough call, mm-hmm. unless you think that QB is ready to go. And as much as we kind of like Shadur and the ability to put the ball where it needs to go and some of the high level passing stuff, mm-hmm. the pocket management still has, there's a lot to work with. He still floats a little bit. There's maybe a lack of overall upside, but like we've talked about before, or I've really talked about more, is in the NFC, the top guys are on their way out. Dak Prescott's in his mid-30s almost. Matthew Stafford is in his mid-30s. Like, the guys are older, and there's more just mid-level guys and really good football teams surrounding them. I mean, I think that the Packers hope that Jordan Love can become that guy, but like, we haven't seen the consistency from him yet either. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to have the Cam Ward upside to have success in the NFC. You just need to be able to field a good football team and a quarterback who's able to make enough plays. And we both believe that Shadur Sanders could be that guy.
Yeah, I definitely do. Again, I just released my reception perception charting profile on Shadur, and every route that he throws is green except for two. And so, like, he's just unbelievably accurate with the football. And I do think that, like, he commands an offense. Now that the offense in Colorado that he's running is extremely wide and very static pre-snap, which I don't think does a lot for him. He did have a 21% screen rate as well. That's extraordinarily high. But also a 10% deep ball rate, 14% over 20 yards, 10% nine ball rate, which is also pretty high. So, like, he was definitely an all or nothing quarterback, but I do wonder, like, if you get him in a structure where there is a decent offensive line and you do have playmakers and a coach in an offensive mind that can insulate him into an offense better than Pat Shurmur did behind that offensive line at Colorado, I think we're talking about a quarterback who steps up and who just commands an offense. I think some of the pocket drifting stuff can be fixed, but also, like, I think it's really hard to separate what is a bad habit versus what is survival in that offense in terms of his pocket work. So, and as much as there's still room to improve in his pocket work, like, I still think it strides better than it was in 2023. So, like, what's to say it can't take another step forward, insulated in an actual offense behind an actual offensive line?
Yeah, and the Giants' offensive line is much improved from even, you know, 2 years ago, and they have Malik Nabers now, which is massive for that offense as well. So you have a little bit to work with there. Let's move away from quarterbacks. We've had enough quarterbacks. Well, we're going to have a little bit more here, but we've talked a lot about quarterbacks over the past two episodes here. DJ has Jalen Walker as the first edge off the board, not named Abdul Carter, going fifth overall. Man, is this the gold star? We just really love the kid as the person. And we believe that if you put him at a set position and don't have him floating around just kind of as a spy attacking, that he could be an all-pro level player. Like, is it just gambling on the perceived upside of a guy who has the explosiveness to delete angles and really attack the football on top of being one of the better personalities that we have seen in interviews over the past couple of years? Like, that's what this is, right? Because there's nothing on the tape, in my opinion, that this states he should be a top five pick.
I agree.
And you don't even have him as an edge.
I don't have him as an edge. I think today he's better as an edge, but I've been on record on this podcast saying I don't even think his edge wins are that impressive. Like, are like high quality edge wins. That Georgia game, or the Texas game in the regular season, not the playoff one, the regular season one, like, he was a havoc wreaker, but I think a lot of it was triggering downhill on Quinn Ewers trying to get out of the pocket, or Quinn Ewers sitting in the pocket for 3 seconds without stepping up, and Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams' entire angles were deleted in pass pro because the viewers wouldn't step up. And so, like, true pass rush wins are really hard to find on this tape, which is why I lent to him to be a linebacker. True linebacker reps on his tape are hard to find as well. So, like, that's really rich. I could get down with a mid first round pick in this class. I could get down with a mid first round pick. Fifth overall. That's a lot.
And a mid first round pick is where Mel has him. I think Mel has him going like 19th or something close to that. With Shamar Stewart going 32nd to Philly is what DJ has. That's so interesting to me.
It's so interesting to me because we're only 2 years removed from Trayvon Walker going number one overall.
Uh-huh.
Which is like almost an identical case to what we're dealing with Shamar Stewart. A very big body defensive end, top tier athlete, length, explosiveness, played a lot of 4-eye at the college level. That kind of clouds a lot of his pass rush production and some run defense production where he's asked to do some dirty work along the interior. And then Trayvon Walker goes to Jacksonville number one overall, and he's coming off back-to-back double-digit sack seasons. Like, we're doing this again. I'm not going to overthink this one. I'm not looking at a box score. I'm not looking at a percentage. Like, I see the tape. I see the heavy hands. I see the explosiveness. I see the get-off. I see the high floor as a run defender. Like, I'm not overthinking this. There's no way he's falling to 32. Just no way that's happening.
Mike Green at 17. Both of them have Mike Green going in the top 17. One, I believe Mel 15th, and DJ has him going 17th. They must not care. Or I don't know what's going on with the. Here's the thing. These teams hire people who have worked in high levels of government to figure out what is going on with these top prospects, all the prospects, but especially these top guys, especially the guys who have whispers about off the field concerns.
Mm-hmm.
They must not be concerned if he is still, as a small school guy, as a transfer to a small school from a bigger school, undersized guy, listen, he's a beautiful pass rusher. Beautiful pass rusher. Some of his wins are incredibly impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still an undersized rusher. I don't think he's a three down player right now. And I'm not there. I'm just not there with it.
I'm not either. And that's before you take into account all of the off field stuff that has come out, you know, since the season ended. As a player, and again, I mean, teams run nickel 75% of the time. Like, it's a passing league, so I get it if you want to take. But like, I legitimately don't think that the floor as a run defender is really there for Mike Green. Like, the one big game they played was against Ohio State, and Will Kaczmarek, which is Ohio State's tight end too, their primary blocking tight end, was singling him most of the game, and then pushing him off the ball like most of that game. So like. I wouldn't trust him as an edge setter early on, as high as like the flashes as a pass rusher are, and the production as a pass rusher, and the explosiveness and the quickness and the packages that he possesses as a pass rusher. Like, I see that all. I don't know, man. I wouldn't do it. It's like, that's drafting. Like, I mean, I guess the Cardinals did it with Hassan Reddick, but they tried to play him off ball early in his career. But like,
yeah,
that's your best case scenario is like a Hassan Reddick situation. Which, I mean, if you can get that, that's really good. But it took Reddick years to get there.
Yeah, that's mostly Arizona's fault. But
yeah, it is 100%.
Yeah, DJ Jahdae Barron at 11, another one of the, in my opinion. You just love the guy. You just love the guy. And you talked about this when you were at the combine. That's all that you heard was about Jahdae Barron. I didn't love his tape nearly this much. I liked him. Didn't love him. But me liking him and then him going out and testing the way that he did, he tested way better than I thought he was going to. Matthew Golden tested way better than I thought he was going to. Like, I like both of those players, but they both also proved to be outrageous athletes at the NFL Combine. So Barron at 11 seems rich to me. Barron at 24, where DJ has him, makes a ton of sense. Minnesota, Washington, like I definitely think he's going to be a first round player. 11 just seems really, really rich for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before, like, pen him into the first round. 11 is really rich. I mean, I know PFF Sport has him, Trevor has him really high as well.
I will say the fit as an outside corner in San Francisco specifically is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for him. That's exactly mm-hmm. what he does already at Texas. So we know he can do that.
But look at like where San Francisco pulled those corners from. They're all like day three picks. Just fit their
scheme. No, absolutely. But they're all cover three scheme fits.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he is. He's a cover mm-hmm. three scheme fit on the outside. And he's perfect for it.
So. I like Green Bay, if he makes it that far, to like Green Bay, like what Rasul Douglas was able to do. And I know that was under a different coordinator than Jeff Hapley, but like Rasul Douglas did a little outside plus apex ish stuff for them and played really good football for a while in Green Bay before getting traded to Buffalo. Like stuff like that. Like, again, you said Brian Flores, that's an excellent candidate to get the most out of a player like this as well. So yeah, I like Jahdae Barron. 11 might be rich, but again, he plays a premium position in a passing league. So like, if it happens, I wouldn't not get it. You know, I'd get it.
Yeah. Gray Zabel at 16 to Arizona. I assume this was DJ. He has him as an interior offensive lineman. So center or guard. I think Gray Zabel is going to come in and be a bully at center immediately, if that's where he ends up. I don't think that he's Graham Barton, but like that's the type of player that you're getting with Gray Zabel, is somebody who can be that physical presence, but still be a very good athlete at the center position as well. He can get out, he can move. He's not as good of a prospect, in my opinion, as Graham was. I loved him. I loved Graham Barton. He was my top offensive lineman last year as a center. That's not where I'm at with Gray, just because the tape that we have is him at tackle that I don't love. And then Senior Bowl tape, which I loved, but it's the Senior Bowl. So his 16 seems rich. He's not in Mel Kiper's first round, but I tend to really trust DJ and his eye and ears when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, I think he's more of a back end of the first round guy, again, because I don't love his tackle tape either, but you can project him to guard. 16 to Arizona is particularly interesting because they like Yelda Furholt, and Yelda Furholt has been playing pretty good football for them over the past couple
seasons. So like, and he's playing right guard for them, right?
No, he's playing center.
Oh, center. He's playing center. That's so right.
This would be a guard pick for the Cardinals, I think. That's pretty rich for an FCS player who doesn't have my favorite tape that I've ever seen, even as a tackle. So I like him more in like the 33 to 40 range, to be honest. I haven't been mocking him in the first round, but I mean, in this class, again, anything can happen in a league that's starved for offensive line play. The league is starved for corners and the league is starved for offensive linemen. Like, it's just is what it is. So he's probably going to go round one.
Marion Hampton. First rounder in both, 12th to the Dallas Cowboys for Mel Kiper. I believe this is the second time that he has mocked Omarion Hampton, 12th to the Dallas Cowboys. DJ has him going 20th overall to Denver, and that fit doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But what this is telling me is that Omarion Hampton is the running back 2 in the NFL's eyes. That's not surprising.
It's not.
Although I disagree with it.
Me too. I want dudes who can turn corners. He's got breakaway speed though, so like I get it to that extent. But like I want dudes who can turn corners and can turn it on. and offer a little something as a pass catcher as well. I wouldn't blame anybody, but the margin between Johnson, Henderson, Omarion Hampton is so razor thin. You could dice that any way you want to. Again, I'm a Johnson truther. Johnson's my RB2 and a top 20 player in this class for me. So like,
and I just think the fit for Johnson
is better in Denver. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And talk about fits. We're not going to talk about the player here. We've talked ad nauseum about Jackson Dart. But Jackson Dart, a first rounder in both of these mock drafts, one to New Orleans, one to Pittsburgh. Which is the better fit? And take value out of this. What is the better fit moving forward for Jackson Dart? It's tough because you don't like the fit anywhere for Jackson Dart, right? Like,
but, no, I mean, Philadelphia is Hurts' backup.
Yeah.
As a starter? Like,
I mean, he won't start.
But as a, if you're taking him first round, like you're planning to start him in 8 to 17 games. Yeah. I mean, the Saints could bench Derek Carr at any time. They've done it before. And he's hurt all the time. The Steelers don't have a quarterback right now, but I hate I hate the fit with Arthur Smith and what Arthur Smith likes to do with his quarterbacks. I would hate that. I mean, Kellen Moore would be fine, but ninth overall? What separates Jackson Dart this year from Spencer Rattler last year? Spencer Rattler has a better arm, better tools, not as mobile, but like a better pure pocket passer. I think a better processor from within structure. Like, where would Spencer Rattler be in this class? I think he'd be like QB3 in this class.
Yeah, after South Carolina year? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, ride it out with Rattler again over using another asset on Dart. Maybe I think like Cincinnati would be a decent fit as a backup, like behind Joe Burrow as Burrow's backup, I think would be a fine fit. But like, it's legitimately hard for me to look on paper and be like, yeah, this would be a really good system for him. Because what he did
that system Ole Miss
isn't translatable. It doesn't exist in the NFL. And if, like, how am I supposed to know what Jackson Dart's eyes are capable of in an NFL offensive system, like with a Clint Kubiak or a Kevin Stefanski or like one of these really structured offenses? It's impossible to predict. But like, based on how he managed a pretty thin playbook and a spread out offense, like I don't have high hopes for his ability to digest an NFL playbook effectively or quickly. Yeah, I mean, Buffalo might be a decent spot as a backup. Cincinnati is a backup, but like, I don't see starter potential here at all. Yeah. Like,
yep. All right, Tet McMillan to the Chargers. In DJ's mock draft, it's not a situation I've thought about because I haven't really thought about him falling to number 22 overall. But that would be an absolutely disgusting fit because you were talking about somebody who is, he might be Mike Williams plus, like that might be who Tet is overall. Because the natural separation isn't really there with him. But you saw Mike Williams have a lot of success when he was healthy with Justin Herbert. And I think along the sideline, having a ball winner over the middle of the field, we saw what they were able to get out of. Why can't I think of his name right now?
Quentin Johnston,
who was awful in year one.
He kind of fell back off at the end of the year last year, too. But he did have a nice stretch.
But he had a good stretch last year. And then they also spent an asset on a really good player in Georgia's wide receiver. And I can't think of his name right now either.
Lad McConkey.
Lad McConkey.
Yeah, I love Lad McConkey.
And this is what happens when I'm up for 16 hours, my brain just ends up turning off at this point. Lad was fantastic last year as a rookie. And I think that helped out Quentin Johnston. And so then you're going to add Tet McMillan to that as well. Mm-hmm. And you have Quentin, who I always thought was a lot like, a little bit like Laviska Shenault, where you can manufacture him some touches. And that's not something that I think that they did a lot in that offense mm-hmm. in LA, but that's something that he can do. He can also kind of take the top off of the defense. And we know Ladd can scoot as well, but Ladd has that true three-level threat to him, and he is a natural separator. So you are getting somebody who is completely different from those two other guys, but alike a little bit, like a guy that you used to have on the roster that had a ton of success when he was healthy with Justin Herbert. So I like the fit overall. And I believe Colson Loveland was gone in both of these mock drafts before the 22nd pick rolled around. Yes, he was gone at number 14 to the Colts in Mel's draft.
Damn.
And he was high. Yeah. And he was gone to number 18 to Seattle in DJ's draft. So that's why the Chargers couldn't draft him. The fit in Seattle's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder if he's like trying to project like a Juwan Johnson type player for Clint Kubiak or something like that. But they have Noah Fant on the roster already, who's a pretty decent athlete and can move well. But so maybe he's trying to project like a Juwan Johnson-ish player to Seattle with Kubiak there. But yeah, that is weird. Do you think this Tet stuff is real? Like everybody seems to think that he's going to fall to like the 14, 15, 16 now. Like I just consistently have been hearing, like seeing it.
I kind of think that's where he fits. I mean, like in a normal class, like last year's class, he would have been wide receiver 6 for me. That's just where we're at with his class. And he was wide receiver 1 by default because the NFL definitely doesn't like Luther Burden. That's for damn sure. I didn't see him in either of these mock drafts.
I don't understand that. Again, if I'm the Browns and Luther Burden's on the board at 33, that's the easiest card to turn in my lifetime.
Yeah, but, everybody seems to have fallen off of the Luther Burden wagon completely. And so, again, we talked about it in a Dafter draft. Matthew Golden is probably wide receiver 1 in this class. Which seems
Travis Hunter
to me. Well, that's if Travis Hunter isn't drafted as a wide receiver. I'm gonna cut you off here. You loved his tape.
I do love his tape. You as a Z and like a number 2. Like a Jordan Addison-ish player.
All these guys are number 2s.
I agree.
They're all number 2s. You loved his tape. You thought he was incredibly refined. He is a ball winner, even though he's 5'11" and 185 pounds. And then he went out and ran a 4.29. So why isn't he? It's just because you don't see him run a 4.29.
But if I have him wide receiver on tape, as wide receiver 3, on tape, like, and I had wide receiver like Tet McMillan as wide receiver 2, who I knew was a mid 4.5 athlete, and then he was a mid 4.5 athlete. Like, I'm not going to move off of that. And I knew Luther Burden, who's my wide receiver 1, and I know I'm on a pretty small island on that, but like, and I knew he was a low 4.4, high 4.3 athlete, and he ran a 4.41, 4.42, something like that. Like, I'm not coming off of that. Like, just because Matthew Golden ran faster than he plays on tape. Like I can't come off of that. So, but I understand how the NFL operates. I understand that GMs can get a little, trigger happy, when stuff like that goes down, but I do love him. I had him wide receiver 4 and I'll probably keep him as wide receiver 4, but like, he's not a 4.29 athlete on tape. So like, I'm going to stick to my guts on the tape there. And as refined as I think he is, I'm okay with like 18 and on, like pick 18 and up for Matthew Golden. But I don't see elite like jetpack takeoff vertically. Like I saw with like Isaiah Bonderly in the season, or like I say with see with like Jalen Knoll. Like those guys have jetpack get offs, like explosiveness off the line. Like Matthew Golden doesn't have that, but Matthew Golden has every ounce of refinement that you could ask as a wide receiver. And to me, it's very Jordan Addison-ish. Very Jaxon Smith-Njigba-ish. And they both went like 18, 19, 20 in that range. I know they went back to back, but I think it was like 19, 20 or 18, 19, something like that.
Yep.
That's kind of where I feel about Matthew Golden in this class.
That's how I feel about everybody in this class. But
yeah.
But I say that Luther Burden is like player number 11 for me and and Tet's number 12. But like, I don't, like, they're both second rounders to me. Neither has a first round grade for me. So, I want to finish this off on a high note for you because I just grilled you on your Matthew Golden stuff. Azariah Thomas, first rounder in both of these mock drafts. I don't like, and I know a lot of people like him. I know a lot of people go to bat for Azariah Thomas. I actually had this conversation with Zach, and with who else was in that conversation? Oh man, I can't remember.
Yeah, I got nothing for you here.
Anyways, I was having a conversation about my issues with him, and they were talking about why they like him, and it's very much the same reasons why you like him. I'm far less comfortable with how comfortable I felt he was in trail technique, and they played a lot of trail at Florida State. I love the size. I love the speed. Fluidity is hit or miss for me. I think he's a little bit stiff. I didn't love what I saw from him in zone coverage, but he's got the body type, got the athleticism. He is going round one in both mock drafts, and that means the NFL is talking, and the NFL likes him. And I might just be wrong about him, or I might look like the genius. It'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, so honestly, my biggest concern is his ability to turn and run. I'm fine with his hips because I've seen him flip them and turn them on like hard breaking out routes by some pretty sharp route runners and stuff like that. And I've seen him mirror those and flip with those pretty well. It is like, and I think he trails well, but like, can he trail NFL speed well? Would be my biggest concern about him. But like, he's such a press tech savant that like, I'm willing to ride with it. I'm willing to ride with it. And he, like, so I think that like, if you have to play him in quarters, he can match well. If you have to play him in quarters, takes a lot of eyes though. And that's where he might take a lot of refinement because quarters takes a lot of eyes to match and know what you're doing there. But I think he's just so refined in press tech that like, I'm just willing to take the shot.
Florida State didn't ask him to think too much.
No, they didn't.
That just always bothers me because
they just said line up in front of this guy 1 yard in front of him and just go to work. That's all I have to do. So he hardly ever got targeted either. So it's hard to like evaluate his ball skills or anything like that because like he just blanketed dudes and they never threw the ball at him. So there's a lot of unknowns there, but I'll take my shots with what I saw in press tech and what I thought I saw when he did play in like some hinged three looks as well. So I'll take my shot there.
That's all we got.
It's a pretty decent episode again.
I think so.
That's a solid work week's worth of episodes right here.
It was
high quality stuff from us.
I mean, listen, I thought so too. I thought so too. That is all we got for this week. We will be back next week. We're going to talk about some of the more underrated guys who should be getting more love than they are in this draft class. We're going to talk about that next week. We will do a mailbag next week because we didn't do one this week. We love doing mailbags. Who knows what else we will get into next week, but we are getting closer to the NFL draft. It is about to be April, and there's a lot of work left to do. There's a lot of work left to do. Until then, I'm Dalton Miller. He's Corey Kinnon. I love you. Goodbye.